FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450. Rutherford County's place to talk. Your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
I know you're out there somewhere. 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 I know you're out there somewhere. Somewhere.
Good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line on this Thursday morning, the 15th of November. And we're going to have some fun today. Mitchell Motes with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. First of all, if you were not at the Read to Succeed Spelling Bee the other night, you missed a lot of fun. Mitchell was one of the celebrity spellers, and he just brought fun to the evening along with several other folks up there. That was a great event.
I tell you what, Bart, it was my first experience with it. I can truthfully say it seems better now than it did right then, but yes, it was fun.
So it's enjoyable to stand up in front of a crowd of a few hundred people and have the opportunity to spell a word.
It's better than having a tooth pulled, I think. Yeah, it is. But it was for a good cause, I think.
And, oh, absolutely.
And I think that the event itself was able to generate some money for the program itself. So that's that's good. It was worth it.
Very difficult. It was, and you did a good job too. He had some hard words.
I appreciate that.
29 degrees right now.
This feels like wintertime.
I think Dwayne was right on his
sun is shining bright, and the frost is melting off the grass or is burning off, and it's still 29 degrees outside.
Is there anything we can do outside this? I guess we're still okay to plant trees and shrubs.
If the ground's not frozen, you can plant those woodies. Trees and shrubs fall is an excellent time to do that. And you know, because, number one, they are dormant, and you're not having, you're not expecting, and you're not really wanting a lot of above-ground growth. But the root systems on plants tend to develop at temperatures. Their ideal temperature for development is lower than what the desired temperature for above-ground growth. So whether it's grass or whether it's trees or whatever, they will still have a good bit of root development, you know, even at cool temperatures. And that's the reason that fall is such a good time. And two, you tend to have better soil moisture in the fall of the year, the fall and the winter time, than you do in the summer. So you don't worry so much about having to apply supplemental irrigation to those woody plants when you put them out. And, you know, a third reason is just a comfort value, because you don't work up near as much of a sweat on a day like, you know, it's going to get up to, what, 58 or so degrees today. Like very comfortable outside for doing that kind of work. It's just an all-around good time to do it, and for several reasons, just like we discussed. So yeah, it's a good time to do that. Bulbs, spring flowering bulbs, you know, now is a good time to put those out. And probably selection is still pretty good at most of your garden centers that carry those bulbs. They may have moved a lot of them out by now, but I suspect there's still some there. And if you have access to some, now's a good time to put them out. You know, generally for us, we can get away with it up into December, probably most years, planting those bulbs that flower in the springtime.
And the pansies you can put out.
Oh, pansies are, pansies have been real pretty. Not only the pansies, and, you know, it struck me the other day that a pansy seems to be inappropriately named
because it
seems like a very tough plant, but it carries the name pansy. And normally when someone's referred to as a pansy, they're certainly not describing him as being tough. But that little pansy flower is pretty, and it sure holds up well in cold weather. You know, you have some of the ornamental green crops, like cold crops, you know, cabbage and so on, that can be put out now as well. And you can complement a planting with both the flowers from a plant like a pansy, or then the different foliage colors from the cabbages and so on.
Now, I was driving down the street the other day, and I always think about your cool weather and cold weather. Unless cool weather and hot and warm season.
Grasses. Yes, cool season, hot season, warm season.
Passed by one yard, and it was all brown.
Brown.
I mean, just very much the same. What would that be? Is that a cool season or warm?
No, that'd be a warm season.
Warm season. Okay.
Yeah, you can, if you don't know, let's say if you move into a home, mm-hmm. or you buy a home or you rent a house, or and you're there in the, you know, you move in the summer and you're wondering, well, I don't know what kind of grass this is. After the first good frost, that's a good clue, because if it all turns brown, it's going to be a warm season. So at least you know that much, because the warm season grasses go into dormancy at frost. Then, you know, you need to, I guess you might want to figure out, well, which one is it? If it's a good, dense, thick stand of grass that has turned brown, then chances are it's probably Bermuda grass. It could be Zoysia grass. Zoysia is not as commonly found. It's being used more, I guess, but it's not as frequent to find that. Weedy type grasses such as Dallas grass and crab grass, they will also turn brown. They go dormant, or the crab grass dies, the Dallas grass goes dormant. But you're not going to have the dense, good quality turf with those grasses that you would with Bermuda grass or Zoysia grass. And so that's a dead giveaway. Now, that is the fact that those grasses go dormant, turn brown, is a commonly spoken reason as to why people don't want Bermuda grass, or mm-hmm. they don't want mm-hmm. to use a warm season.
Because it
grass.
Was really brown.
Really brown, but
now this grass out here at the city building across from us.
Yes.
With if it didn't have the leaves on it, it would be sort of green.
It's got some green in it, and you know that's that is a very common appearing grass right there. We call that Tennessee unimproved, I think.
Tennessee unimproved.
It's a mixed bag of stuff. You've got some cool season plants and some warm season plants out there. Looks like you've got some common Bermuda grass growing in there, as well as some tall fescue or another cool season type grass. A little crab grass scattered in there too.
But yeah. Maybe a weed or so.
The crab grass would qualify as a weed, I think. But yeah, but you know that brown color is a reason why folks say, well, I don't like this stuff because it turns brown. Well. But if you have a uniform stand of that, if that's what you have in the lawn area, and it's all uniformly one color, well, uniformity is a desired goal mm-hmm. for most people, and you know brown is a color too. And plus, you know, you have a shorter maintenance time. You can park the lawnmower, put it away for the winter earlier, because tall fescue, those cool season grasses, I mean, they're still growing. If it's got adequate nutrition, you can find folks mowing.
And they're green.
Because they're green and they are growing, they need to be mowed. So, you know, there's some real pluses to look at a Bermuda grass or a warm season grass. And you have, some weed control strategies with the warm season grasses that you don't have with the cool season. In some cases, weed control is easier mm-hmm. because you don't have to have as many products on hand to take care of broadleaf weeds versus grassy weeds, et cetera. But there's some good sides to it. Bad side is that those warm season grasses like Bermuda and Zoysia grass do run. They creep. They don't stay in one place. So they'll creep over into a flower bed. And you've got to stay on top of that to keep those free of that grass. That's just part of the maintenance program. You just need to be aware of that. And as long as people are aware of it and know what to expect and kind of have some idea how to deal with it, I think there are lots of folks that have lots of a lot of settings where Bermuda grass would be a good choice for them. It'll survive the heat.
Another thing this time of the year brings is pruning your trees and shrubs, and this is obviously the time of the year the leaves go off the trees.
Yeah,
which
getting those things
easier,
opened up, you can see them. You can find those limbs that are rubbing across one another and they're too crowded and so on. So, yeah, it's
should
not a bad
we
time.
Wait until the leaves get off? I mean, is that the sign that, hey, this is the, is it the sap's running? Is that what you're saying?
Not generally. You know, once the leaves have turned color on these deciduous trees, mm-hmm. you're okay. Just from a physiological standpoint, it's not going to hurt the tree. You know, you reduce weight that you're dealing with if the leaves are all falling, if they all fall off to start with. But no, now's a pretty decent time to do it. You know, now on up through late winter time is a good opportunity to prune those trees. the evergreens, you know, basically if the wood's not frozen, and that holds true for any of them, it's okay to prune it. You could cause some damage, I guess, if the wood is frozen when you're out there pruning on it. But, yeah, this is a pretty decent time to do it. But you're talking about the leaves, though. You do want to get leaves up. You don't want to leave those I say you want to. If your goal is to have, you know, the highest quality lawn area out there, then, yeah, you want to remove the leaves off of it because it doesn't do the grass. Well, if it's, let's say you have a tall fescue turf. You don't, it's green growing right now. You've got a good thick layer of leaves on it. Well, it excludes sunlight. Well, it's got to have sunlight in order to grow. And so you leave the leaves lay there long enough and you pull the leaves back. Well, the grass has gone off color. It may have a yellow cast to it. And that's detrimental to the grass. So it's a good idea to remove the leaves. And you can take them and run them through your lawnmower, run them through a leaf shredder. You know, use them as mulch, just like they are after they've been chopped up, or add them to a compost pile and break them down. It makes a good component for a compost pile. And then once that compost is made, you add it back into your flower beds or your vegetable beds and so on. So it's, you know, a good use of recycling resources.
If you have had a consistent amount of leaves, limbs falling off your trees, they're brittle and appear to be dead, and the wind comes through a storm, and you have these on the ground.
Yep.
On a consistent basis, have had that way for maybe a year.
Yep.
Does that mean that if you had someone come in who really knew what they were doing as far as pruning the trees, you could trim them back and that would not...
You could minimize that problem.
Minimize, okay.
You sure could. And you brought up a real good point. Mature trees, especially those deciduous trees, you know, let's use a maple, for example, silver maple especially. Those, you know, they grow fast and they have a good spreading habit, make good shade and so on. But, boy, they'll have a lot of small limbs. And when I say small, I'm saying, bigger around than a broomstick handle, mm-hmm. Significant size, but they're still not huge limbs. They die. They do that and just shed limbs all the time. And when the wind's blowing, it's going to knock them out. I think Saturday I picked limbs up three times. I was out working in the yard. And from the same two trees, two maple trees, picked limbs up three times from them blowing out onto the ground. They're getting in the way of things. So if you say you had an arborist come through there and do a canopy thinning, and, mm-hmm. and you know they're not topping the tree, they're not reducing the height of the canopy. What they're doing is they're going in and taking out individual limbs and so on. They're opening the canopy up. They're going to take out any dead wood, obviously dead wood that's there now, because a lot of times you can see up in the tree where that limb's dead, but you can't reach it. You know, you have to wait for it to fall, or you're going to climb a ladder or something to get down. You can avoid from having to pick that thing up after it falls by going and having it cleaned out. And it's always a good idea to remove dead wood anyway. And thinning a canopy on a real thick canopy tree, like Bradford pear, for example, you know, they just have very dense canopies, and they're prone to break. Especially under real windy conditions when they get some size and some age on them. Well, one way to help reduce the chances of that, you're going to eliminate it because it's the nature of that wood. It's not a super strong wood. But if you can eliminate, you know, the wind resistance, reduce it by thinning the canopy out, taking some of the mass out of there so you open it up to allow the wind to flow through it easier, then you're going to cut down on the chances for the limbs being blown out. So, you know, thinning is a very viable and recommended practice in a lot of cases.
Very good. I tell you what, let's do. Let's pause for just a moment, check on the traffic and weather, and we'll be back and continue the conversation. And when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines. If you have any questions, 893-1450, 893-1450. Mitchell Moat with us this morning from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. He is here to help you out today. Stay with us. And remember, Sunday Marketplace this Sunday, 1 to 4 at the Lane Agri Park. You're supposed to say what I say.
Oh, well, you're exactly right. It's right there at the Lane Agri Park at 1 o'clock on Sunday. And this will be the third week for it, I think. And the first week was good. The second week was great. I mean, had a huge turnout. So if the weather forecast holds up, there may not be enough room for everybody out there this Sunday.
All right. Sounds fun.
Okay.
Sports Talk with Bonnie Hill and Tim Tackett at 2, followed by Sports Night with George Plaster at 3. Weekdays on WGNS, AM, FM, online.
Ford of Murfreesboro has just been named the number one Shelby Cobra dealership in the United States. Test drive the Shelby Cobra that has the all-new supercharged 5.8-liter V8. Ford of Murfreesboro was also named the number three dealer in the U.S. for selling the Mustang Roush. Come test drive and take home a new 540-horsepower Stage 3 Mustang from Roush today. Ford of Murfreesboro, your Roush and Cobra headquarters. On Broad at Northfield Boulevard and online at fordofmurfreesboro.com.
For over 130 years, dreams have come true at Bell Jewelers. Come by and let Lisa, Greg, or anyone at Bell Jewelers show you the Bellatoire Fun Fashion Color Line. You get a free Bellatoire necklace with a purchase of $300 or more
now through the end of the year.
That's at Bell Jewelers. They really do make dreams come true. 821 Northwest Broad, across from Toots. Bell Jewelers.
Get more for your money when you play it again. Play it again, sports!
Your fitness headquarters on North Thompson Lane.
WGNS Time Saver Traffic.
Good morning. No accidents or incidents to report in Murfreesboro at this hour. According to Murfreesboro Police, we've got a bit of congestion on I-24 at 96, I-24 at 231. Also busy traffic on I-24 at Medical Center Parkway. For the best in hardwood flooring or paint for your home, call or come by Bradford Hardwood Flooring or Paint Center at 1999 Nolensville Pike. They're near the fairgrounds. Call 251-5384 or go online to bradfordwoodfloorsandpaint.com. I'm Randy Bryan with traffic on WGNS.
Thank you, Randy. What about that Murfreesboro weather? Brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
For the forecast area today, plenty of sunshine, highs in the mid-50s. We'll have a light north wind around 5. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, low of 33. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Faluber.
Currently, 36.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro, and we have hot, delicious Otis Spunkmeyer cookies every day. Come and see us, First National Bank of Murfreesboro, member FDIC, and home of Otis Spunkmeyer hot, delicious cookies.
We break in with traffic, news, and weather bulletins anytime. Good Neighbor Talk is your 24-7 connection. WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
Ain't got no hope. I know blade wrong. Ain't got no home. I know face wrong. I'm a lonely boy. I ain't got a home. I got a voice. I love to sing. I sing like a girl. And I sing like a frog. I'm a lonely boy. I ain't got a home.
Now, that's back when music had meaning.
Oh, yeah. It had real message to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He's going to sing like a frog also.
Sing like a frog. And you don't hear that so much anymore.
No, you don't.
You really don't.
You have to go out to the pond at the Lane Agri Park to really
You could probably find some frogs out there.
Yeah.
But on a cool night, I don't know how much they're singing.
There's the singing like a girl.
Singing like a girl.
We can't take the call until he sings like a frog.
Oh, it would just not be right.
No, it would be wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Now, frogs? That's not a frog.
That's not a frog. No.
You know, you could know the words to that. We'll have to catch the frog another time.
We'll catch him later. But yeah, he probably didn't take didn't take him long to learn that song.
No, no. Let's go to the phones. Okay. Good morning. You're on with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
Just fine. I just got a quick question. I got some apple trees. When can I trim back limbs on the apple tree without doing any damage to the tree itself?
From a fruit production standpoint, it's really recommended to prune apple trees in the the late winter time, early spring time frame. And again, that's kind of a fluid window you're looking at there. But the goal is to do it just as they right before, just as they initiate new growth for the coming spring. From a fruit production standpoint, that is the suggested time that you do that. Now, if it's let's say that you've got and again, I don't know what, how big the apple tree is or where it's situated or whatnot, but let's say you've got limbs that are in the way, or they pose they pose a hazard, maybe they block view, or they they slap your head every time you walk by with a lawnmower or ride the lawnmower by. You're not going to hurt the tree to remove that wood right now. And you could prune a lot out of the tree now, and just from the tree health standpoint, you're not going to hurt it. But from a fruit production standpoint, it's suggested that you do that pruning in the late winter time, early springtime, just as you start to see new buds open up on the tree. They really haven't opened up. You're starting to see buds swell. That's the suggested time as far as fruit to maximize fruit production.
Now, do you have some brochures? Because I know each type of tree is often a little different as far as
we have. The university has put together a very, I think, helpful guidebook. Good practices for pruning. For instance, and that's it goes through and explains about the various kinds of pruning that's done, size reduction, thinning, pruning, and so on. And then on various kinds of plants, where you look to make cuts, and do you make a straight cut or a slanted cut? Do you cut at the bud, below a bud, things like that. You don't have to come to the Extension office to get that. It's available online at the University of Tennessee Extension website. There's a publication section there, and a person can access that through that. But we'd certainly love you to come out to the Extension office and, see what's there. And talk with us, and if you have questions about something, we'll sure do our best to help you with that. Samples, if you have a plant that's doing poorly, sometimes we can maybe figure out from a sample what the likely cause of that is. But it needs to be a large enough sample. And when you've got a great big tree and you bring a little bit of leaf in, sometimes, if you could spare a little more, you might want to bring a little bit more. But a good representative sample is often very helpful.
Now, one thing that I know we've talked about, and it's been a while since we've talked about the importance of getting a soil test done.
Yes, sir.
Is this a good time of the year to, or is there
a
bad
time? Well, it's not a bad time to do it. This is a good time for, number one, it's certainly not as hot as it was in June, and the ground is much softer. So you can go to that 6-inch depth and pull that sample much more readily now than you could during the drier months of the year. And as a rule, the soil lab itself is not as busy now, because they're going to do probably 2/3, 3/4 of their samples in that late February through April time period every spring. And turnaround time is not bad anyway. They have updated some equipment, and they can run through things faster than they once could, and probably you're looking at a week turnaround in most cases anyway, but it might even be faster than that this time of the year, because they are not processing the same volume of samples that they will in the spring of the year.
And the results would be the same whether you take the soil this time of the year or when
because
it's hard
what you're testing for, and you can get various soil tests, you can ask for various things, but what most people need and what's going to benefit them is just a basic soil test. Basic soil test is going to measure soil pH. And then that then tells whether you need to try to adjust the pH, either raising or lowering the pH. And for most crops, we need to be at a pH slightly acid to approaching neutral. It's a 14-point scale, so 7 is neutral, right in the center of the scale. Anything below 7 is going to be acid, and the further away from 7 you get, the more acid it gets. Anything above 7 is going to be basic, so the further above 7 you get, the more basic it becomes. Again, most of our plants need are going to function best, grow best at a neutral to slightly acid pH. Turf grasses, in the 6s, 6.1 to 6.6 or something like that, to 7, they're going to be fine. Most of your flowering plants, ornamental flowers, are going to be that way. Your trees are that way. Now, you have some that are real acid lovers, though. Azaleas like to have, they need an acid soil. An acid pH allows them to grow better. Blueberries, they need to be acid. Rhododendrons, plants like that require a more acid soil. But so that basic test tells you what pH is. It also gives you a reading of what the available phosphorus and potassium levels are in the soil, calcium and magnesium. It measures cation exchange capacity, which influences how the soil is going to respond to, let's say, if you need to add lime to raise the pH, mm-hmm. well, that cation exchange capacity influences how readily it will adjust, you know, how rapidly it'll adjust, and that influences maybe how much lime has to be applied. For most folks, it doesn't mean anything. I just take it for what it says, and, well, I'm glad they told me that, but then I'm going to put out what, you know, the recommendation was in terms of adding the fertilizer. So that part doesn't change regardless, whether you take it in the spring, whether you take it in the summer, because it's going to measure what's there right then. And the good thing is the phosphorus and potassium levels, I mean, unless you've got plants that are removing them, they're pretty stable in the ground. They don't change drastically. The lab, as a rule, does not test for nitrogen simply because nitrogen does change very rapidly. Nitrogen levels change in the soil. Nitrogen recommendations for plants are based on years and years of observed response. So they've determined, and by who are they? Well, the agricultural scientists, the mm-hmm. folks that have worked mm-hmm. at the research stations, the experiment stations for all these years, know that, for a given crop, whether you're growing turf grass, well, turf grass needs about 4 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 feet of turf grass per year applied at some interval, mm-hmm. okay? Mm-hmm. Well, when you submit a soil test, you submit it for a crop or crops to be grown, and the results will come back with what you have in the ground. You know, here's what you got. All right, and here's what we suggest you do in terms of applying fertilizer and or lime to help maximize the potential of the plant.
Now, if you're putting in grass, obviously if it's your lawn, you're interested in grass.
Sure.
Is there a different answer if you put in cool season versus warm season grass?
There would be a different answer in terms of the suggested schedule of fertilizer application.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the amount of nitrogen required is going to be roughly the same for a cool season grass and a warm season grass. Our cool season grass, and since you mentioned grass, if you submit a soil test or a sample to be tested for turf grass, and the report will come back to you, well, it will have three levels of maintenance, okay, and then the individual is going to decide which level they want to follow. You have a low level. We don't do very much fertilization. You would not anticipate the quality would be as high as a medium level, nor would the medium be as high as the high maintenance level. Well, let's use the high maintenance level for example. On a cool season grass, the recommendation is going to be to apply the majority of that fertilizer the September, October, November, with a little fertilizer, just a fourth of it, in the spring, the March-April time period, March to the middle of April time period. Because a cool season grass does the most of its growth, most vigorous growth, in the cool months.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a warm season turf grass being grown on the same site, the readings are going to be the same regardless whether you say it's a warm season or a cool season grass in terms of how much phosphorus or how much potassium is there. But it will have an altogether different schedule. It's going to suggest that you make your first fertilizer application, say on Bermuda grass, say around the 15th of April, and then again about every 6 weeks up through the 1st of September. And you cut it off at that point because that grass then in September, you know, daylight starts to get shorter, the grass starts to transition out of real rapid growth into, it's going to winterize itself, so growth rate slows down, and you don't need to fertilize it. It's not growing. That's when you want to fertilize plants, when they're growing, when they can use it. So warm season grasses are fertilized during the warm months, cool season during the cool months. And that's how the results change based on crop. But the reading of what's there is going to be the same regardless of whatever crop you're going to grow. The recommendations will be different based on the crop.
Let me get your thoughts on something. Obviously, people think about grasses when it starts right before baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the weather starts changing. Yeah. You have cabin fever usually. And from yep. Dwayne Trail's folklore forecast, we're going to have cabin fever this
yeah.
year. And you start thinking, I want to plant some grass. I'm ready to do that. And then they come over and they walk through your plots of grass there at the Lane Agri Park.
They look pretty good, by the way.
You really need to do that.
They look pretty good.
And that's what I'm thinking. Now is a good time. Don't wait until, I mean, if you come over there at the beginning of spring, whether it's cool season or warm season, it's going to look pretty good. Go over there now. It's cold, I mean, 29 degrees. Go over there.
I tell you, really, the best time to choose, if you want to choose if you want to pick out a cool season grass, let's say a tall fescue,
okay,
if you want to choose one that is that does well under our environmental conditions, you know, July is not a bad time to go look at that grass growing in August. Because
but you pick it out, you can't put it down, though, can you?
Well, no, but you're going to plant it though in August, in September, though.
Oh, okay.
But you see how it looks at its it from the environmentally most stressed time, and that which it looks which holds up better to those environmental stresses, well, that's kind of a plus for it, I would think. And you can tell more about. I mean, this time of year it's easy to make tall fescue look good because it's going to grow good. Now, if it's got enough moisture and you feed it, it will grow. Okay, it's going to do that. And it's not a problem to keep a good stand of it during the cool months. It is an issue in the hot weather when it gets dry. Now, my site is irrigated. It's hand irrigated. It doesn't have a system there. I mean, I drag a hose and a sprinkler over it. But in all honesty, it was easier to keep a good stand of all those tall fescue grasses this year for me than it was, say, the year before. And we were terribly hot and dry, but I was able to water it, you know, and keep it alive from that standpoint. And did it look bad? Yeah, it looked bad. It suffered, but it didn't die. And I didn't have a lot of disease pressure in it because our humidity was so low so much of the time. You have more disease pressure when you have higher humidity conditions. Put out very little fungicide on those grasses this year compared to, you know, the two previous years. Used a lot more fungicide on them because disease pressure was heavier. But again, you can, from a cool season grass, you can tell more about its toughness, I guess, by looking at it during the most stressful part of the year, how it's holding up at that point, looking at color and stand density and so on, and then look at that same site again, you know, in the fall after it transitioned back into good growth, because it's not going to look as pretty during that stress time, and then how does it bounce back? You know, did the stand thin out? You know, come October, do you have a good dense stand of grass? That's what you want. Those grasses will do that. And you know, some years, boy, conditions are right, and they all suffer, and you lose more than you would have thought that you would, and you do have to wind up doing some overseeding and so on. But it should be the goal to have to do as little of that as possible from one year to the next, you know, to keep a stand of grass.
Now, you mentioned going out and taking a look at those plots in midsummer, and then the best time to seed is in September.
On cool season grass, yeah, September, October, that's your seeding window.
Okay, now what can you do in the spring? Because I always
you can sow grass in the spring. Okay. The cool season grass, you can sow it in the spring of the year. Now, that is not as desirable because the grass roots, the plant, you know, is going to germinate and then it's going to develop a root system. Well, the bigger and the stronger the root system is, the better able it is to carry the plant through the stress of the summer. So it doesn't have as long to grow and develop before the stress of the summer hits it if you plant it in March versus if you plant it in September. And so it's not uncommon to lose more of a spring-established cool season grass than it is a fall-established cool season grass during the same summer.
If you were going to do a survey of numbers of grass, cool season or warm season in Rutherford County, which one of those would win? Or are they pretty?
No, there are more people. You just drive by, and again, nothing scientific about this. Just. My observation, and maybe I'm biased, that's what I'm looking for, but I would say that there are more people that try to maintain a cool season turf versus a warm season turf.
Okay.
But
so that's probably more suitable for our climate. I mean, if more people...
You have more months of green color with a cool season, like a tall fescue, than you will with Bermuda grass, unless you overseed the Bermuda grass with rye grass, you know, prior to it going dormant. But I do think that there are people that are not taking advantage of Bermuda grass that ought to, and would save themselves some heartache, some headache by doing that, because it's going to survive the heat whereas the tall fescue is going to suffer more in the heat. But, you know, just, you know, get over the fact that it turns brown, or you could overseed the stuff with ryegrass, you know, in August, September time period, so that you don't have that brown phase, you know, that it stays green year-round. Personally, I think that's bypassing one of the good qualities of the Bermuda grass, because you get it green, you have to mow it more, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But there are folks that are certainly, you know, their goal is to have a green turf year-round. If you use Bermuda grass, then you're going to have to overseed it. But as far as having to go back and reestablish Bermuda grass, that seldom is going to happen. Now, Bermuda grass won't grow in the shade, you know, so if you've got very much shade, that's not an option for you. The tall fescue will tolerate shade. And again, it doesn't love shade, but it will tolerate some light shade. When you get a little deeper shade, you need to look at like creeping red fescue. But it can be shady enough that no grass will grow mm-hmm. there.
Sure.
And that is a frustrating experience. I had a question yesterday about that very topic. Someone had emailed and said, you know, we've got this spot, and boy, we seed and we fertilize and we water every year, and we just can't get grass to grow there, but it's under a tree. And I just wonder if it's too much shade. That was a question. Well, I haven't seen it, but probably so. You know, probably it's too much shade. Because the big part of the year, then when that tree's got its leaves on, it's going to be a heavy shade. Plus, the grass roots and the tree roots are competing for the same available water. So it, in reality, it probably takes more water to grow grass in a drip line of a tree inside the under the canopy of a tree than it does out in the sun, because those tree roots and the grass roots are fighting for it. We think about trees having deep roots. Well, they do have roots that go deep. Well, grass mm-hmm. has roots that go deep too. I mean, tall fescue can root 3 feet down if there's nothing to obstruct those roots from going that deep. And, you know, if water goes that deep, they'll go down there too. But trees have a lot of roots in the top foot of ground. I mean, that's where the mass of their feeding roots are, in the top 12 inches of the soil.
Remember a few years ago, there were some creative people who were coming up with unique plants and what have you. They came out with a tomato tree.
Yeah.
And then there was somebody who came out with a grass that would only grow so tall. It would just quit growing. Did that ever work? I mean, I don't hear much about things like that anymore.
Well, the no-mo gene,
yeah,
in
okay.
the grass.
No-mo,
it was,
okay.
Did it work? I don't know. That it hadn't been perfected.
They're still working on it.
Yeah, it hasn't been perfected. I do think that, you know, that capability is there to alter genetics to the point that, you know, it will reach, say, 3 inches tall and then not grow any taller than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it will – what's going to have to happen, I think, is that it's not going to be like artificial grass. You know, you never have to do anything to it, because it's going to change in appearance. I mean, it has to put out new shoots. Well, so you're going to have blades that are dying, and, you know, new ones coming on. So it's not going to have it may not look like we expect it would look all the time. You think, well, that's a great thing. You know, you don't ever have to mow it. I don't know if it's going to get to that point. But it does have, and it may. I don't know. It may. But let's say in like highway right-of-ways, we have real steep areas and so on, you know, they have to be mowed and all that. Boy, that's a possibility for a plant like that, because you don't have to worry about mowing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it gets so tall. And then, you know, appearance is not that important compared to, you know, visibility and, you know, safety of the folks who are trying to maintain the highways and so on. That'd be a great location for a plant like that, I think.
You know, they already have it. Doug Young sells it at City Tile.
The carpet, yeah.
Turf.
Yeah. Yes, you can buy artificial turf from a variety of stores.
Yeah.
You can.
We'll be right back. Stay with us. We're talking lawns and gardens, even though it's 29.
If you bring the papers down, you know everybody's fighting on with each other. No one you could count on me, not even
Titans, MTSU, Tennessee, Vandy, Predators. I'm George Plaster, and we're talking about all your teams 3 to 6 here on WGNS.
Does your home have foundation problems? Bricks cracking, doors sticking, basement walls bowing, floors uneven, or water problems? Where do you turn? What name do you know and trust? Call United Structural Systems at 227-2275. For over 17 years, United Structural Systems has stabilized, restored, and guaranteed over 5,800 homes and businesses in Middle Tennessee. We know that you, like our customers, want a restored home, a lifetime guarantee, and the peace of mind that United Structural Systems, a locally owned company, will be here for you. Call United Structural Systems today at 227-2275 or visit them on the web at usstn.com. United Structural Systems, known best for being better.
We'll guarantee our best. Call USS.
For the forecast area today, plenty of sunshine, highs in the mid-50s. We'll have a light north wind around 5. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, low of 33. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Faluber.
Currently, 36.
Now's the time to spruce up your home before friends start arriving for the holidays. The place to start is Bell Furniture. My buddy, Perry Bell, over there sells first-quality name-brand furniture about half price every day. Beautiful Serta sectional sofas. Cherry dinette sets with four chairs. Half price every day with Perry Bell at Bell Furniture. 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna.
Make sure you take care of yourself first. Get your travel immunizations at Reeves Sane. Whether you're traveling to deliver medicine or to serve in a mission, the most important thing is that you're healthy enough to do it. Make Reeves Sane your first travel destination. We're proud of the service we provide and are pleased to help ensure your good health throughout your trip. Our comprehensive care and experience in planning for this type of travel is unparalleled in Middle Tennessee. This is Lori Sane Smith at Reeves Sane. Contact us at 896-5731 or visit us at 1801 Memorial Boulevard.
The GNS in our call stands for Good Neighbor Station. That's been our objective since 1947. Now more than ever, count on WGNS.
We're back again. Dial quickly, 893-1450. Only about 5 minutes left in the program. Mitchell Mote, outstanding speller, with us today. 893-1450 is the number. We're talking lawns and gardens this morning. And once again, the Sunday Marketplace is this Sunday.
Sunday Marketplace, Sunday from 1 until 4. There at the Lane Agri Park Community Center. That's if you've not visited there before, you know, Lane Agri Park office complex is at 315 John Rice Boulevard. Well, you can turn in any of the entrances and just don't stop at the first building. Just go all the way to the back side of the property, and there you'll find it.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about some really unique Christmas gifts.
There'll be just a variety of things there. I hesitate to, well, I'm not even going to go try to start listing stuff off because I'll leave some things out and not do justice to it. But a variety of stuff, some very quality items there.
And these are things that are unique, and you're not going to find them other places. Many of them handcrafted.
Oh, majority are, yes. Yeah. I mean, they're you know, locally, they're hand produced.
Yeah,
local. And local is, you know, I guess a relative term. Actually, in terms of, I think... USDA defines local as within 400 miles, but we don't have anybody coming 400 miles. So... I think, you know, we do have some vendors from as far away as McMinnville, and that's not a you don't have to pack your lunch necessarily to go to McMinnville and back, but you know, they're all local here in the Middle Tennessee area. Many are in Rutherford County and the surrounding counties.
Just a fun time, and that's one.
It is good atmosphere there with the music and so on.
Well, let's go to the phones. Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Mote. How are you today?
I am blessed. Good morning, Bart.
Good morning,
Mitchell.
Good morning, sir.
You were mentioning the Sunday market. Is that for different vendors to set up there? And if so, what's the cost to set up?
It is for vendors. And you know what? I'm sorry. I can't tell you what the cost is. Janie Becker is the farmer's market manager, and there is a set of guidelines out there. I don't know what the answer to that is. You could sure get a copy of those guidelines and see if it'd be something you'd be interested in doing. It also, you know, has rules of what you can and what you can't do there, what you can sell, what you can't sell. You contact our office at 898-7710 and you know, just ask for a copy of the farmers market guidelines. And they can tell you over the phone what the daily fee is. It's not much, I don't think. I'm thinking that during the regular season, $7 is what a booth space is during the you know Tuesday, Friday normal farmers markets. To my knowledge, it's not any different, but I don't know that, so I can't tell you that that's what the fee is.
That gives you a ballpark,
yeah,
though.
I think it's going to be in the wall. But give the office a call, 898-7710, and just tell them what it is you're looking for, and the ladies there will be able to direct you or to give you the information you need.
All right.
Well, thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You have a great day.
I hope you, too, have a great day. Thank you so much.
Yes,
thanks,
sir.
Again. Bye-bye. 893-1450 is our number. And once again, that is this Sunday, and this is every Sunday up until December 16th?
Through the December 16th, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, the Sunday before, well, the last Sunday before Christmas, I guess.
Head over there after you go to church and eat lunch and make it an afternoon event with the family.
Yeah, yep, it's a good opportunity to do that.
Live music, at least in the planning.
Yeah. I mean, there's normally music there.
If there's not, you can just start singing.
Absolutely, burst into song, yeah. You'll get attention one way or another.
That's right.
Everybody has to be known for something, I guess.
If I burst into song, they would ask
you'll
me
be
to
known.
Leave, probably.
Be the first guy thrown out of the Sunday market.
Oh, man. Once again, we're about almost out of time right now. So,
well,
this
I'll tell you what, Bart, one other thing. You know, if folks are through working outside, and you know, I'm not mowing grass anymore. I'm not gonna do any more tilling. I'm not gonna do more weed eating. I'm not gonna do any pruning with my hedge trimmers and whatnot.
Go to sleep.
Yeah, take a nap before you do that. Go ahead and do your maintenance on that equipment so have it ready to go for you next spring. Lawnmowers, you know, they need to have an annual oil change or more frequently depending on how hard you use them. But air filters need to be clean. If you store them with gas in the tanks, use a stabilizer to help keep varnish from developing in that gas and causing problems in the carburetor later on. Sharpen blades. Clean things off. You know, rust, regardless of what the popular myth is, rust is not a protective coating on most metal. It will wear it out, so remove rust and dirt and so on and keep things clean and oiled and sharpen them up. And next spring when it's time to go, you will be ready to go and not have to spend your day down at the repair shop.
Mitchell Moat with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.